Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Harris and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you too.
We're back. Mm. Well, we're sort of back.
We are.
I'm just having a coffee to try to get my brain back on track after the break. But I think Annie's more with it. So
I didn't get much of a break. So it's just new year
just
in name
rolling
only.
On.
Yeah.
I love it. So this week we've been reading Trespasses by Louise Kennedy. But first, book news. And there's one bizarre piece of news that Annie sent me during the holidays, which was that a man has pled guilty to stealing over 1,000 manuscripts. Tell us about this gentleman, Annie.
Well, I remember talking about it really briefly. I can't remember if it was on the podcast or just in general with you when Sally Rooney's new book was due to come out. And do you remember all the hype about that? And everyone was getting the advance proofs and then they were getting sold for hundreds of pounds. And this guy had intercepted her novel before, like during the publication process. So before it was even available as an advanced proof copy,
right,
he had kind of read it. And he's done this with a lot of other authors. Some of the names I can remember are Ian McEwan and
Margaret Atwood.
Yes. So a lot of these really heavily hyped novels, he would make an email address that was similar enough to their publishers but with, you know, a zero instead of an O or something like that to try and, you know, just fly under the radar. And the author would send through a copy of their manuscript and he would get to read it seemingly for no purpose. I think that's the thing that intrigues and delights me about
it. It's so bizarre. Mm. So he was posing as an agent, was it?
I think so. I think he does work in the industry.
He worked at Simon & Schuster, yeah, and I think he was a rights manager,
yeah,
or something like that. So he knew how the industry worked. And I was as I was reading this story, I was thinking, well, I would fall for that. As a busy author, if you're a really busy author, you're trying to actually write the book and you then have to deal with emails for part
of your
day.
The editorial team changes all the time. You know, there's always some new intern or admin person.
I would have thought Margaret Atwood would have a contact person that would –
yeah,
that
like liaise with her.
Swap over.
Yeah, but obviously
on
he
her,
had kind of honed his
and
craft.
And Ian McEwan. But they must, you know, I would be that author who would get the email from, you know, it's Tamara, I'm just writing on behalf of Glenn, your agent. He just wanted to get a copy of the manuscript when it's ready. I would be the one to fall for that.
Yeah.
Because who's double checking the domain name if
no,
it's your known publisher?
Exactly.
It wouldn't work if it was... It all depends on what publisher it seemed to come from. But
yeah, it's very sneaky.
Yeah, you're right. The bizarre thing was he wasn't then trying to get money from them to keep it private because, of course, the big concern is that it gets leaked.
Yeah.
And he wasn't trying to blackmail them.
Mm.
He didn't ask for money.
I guess.
And he wasn't leaking it to anybody.
Yeah, or trying to plagiarise, you know, steal ideas or whatever. But I think he's just a really keen reader who really, really, really wanted to read the book first.
Yeah.
And that is just, I don't know, kind of sad to me.
He's a sort of an obsessive fan.
Yeah.
Almost.
Really. But I remember when the Sally Rooney story broke, they knew that he'd been doing or that someone had been doing this for years and they'd never been able to catch who it was because, you know, he just makes a new email address every time and then he's gone. Love to see that he's been caught.
Very interesting.
I think he did end up getting charged with something.
It's a sort of sad
it is
in a way.
Sad.
But he has pled guilty, which will help him. So that was one bizarro story. And the next one is just something I've been hearing a lot about. So I thought we'd could talk about it briefly, Annie, which is that there's a new chatbot that has the new form of AI that's been released called ChatGPT, which I think GPT or GPT.
GBT.
GBT. The technology has been around for a couple of years, but this is a chat version.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask me what that means. I'm not your expert, but that's what's new about it. And it's the same company in San Francisco who made DALL-E, which I think creates artwork. And so both have been going viral. So there was an article in The New Yorker called, which the title was, Can a Chatbot Rewrite My Novel? And so, of course, that's one of the questions that comes up because this new AI is supposed to be quite – it learns very quickly. It learns from the internet, so it's really only as good as what's on the internet, but it learns and can admit mistakes and and so on. And so the question is, well, in that case, do I need to write the novel or can this chatbot write it for me? And a couple of podcasts have put it to the test. Script Notes, which is a screenwriting podcast, and In Suspense, which is a couple of crime writers. And Script Notes asked it to pitch, I've forgotten exactly, I think they asked it to write a pitch for a movie, and they gave it a couple of parameters like man goes into space or something like that. And it wrote what they said was a pretty average pitch, but they said this is exactly the sort of thing that a movie producer in Hollywood would love, you know, because it was so generic that's what gets made, you know.
God, that's depressing.
Pitch. Well, as a pitch, not necessarily the whole script. I think then, no, they did get it to do a bit of the script as well, and they weren't thrilled with it, but they, you know, this is all early days, I think, with these things. And then In Suspense, they asked, they said, can you write the opening paragraph of a YA novel where teenagers, it opens where teenagers are in the woods and something happens, or I can't remember how much detail they gave it. And then she read, and she herself wrote that first paragraph as well. So she read out both, and I could tell immediately because the AI version was quite bland. It was the teenagers walked into the woods, it was dark and foggy, and hers was Karen stopped, there was that noise again. And, you know, immediately it's more specific. It's more – so I think what's missing from it at the moment is it doesn't have those surprising elements, those human idiosyncrasies, the things that we actually – when you watch a movie or read a book that really sticks with you, it's the really sort of specific details.
Also, if you make a program that relies on cliche, like if it's a machine learning, it learns from the thing that is most abundant out there, and that then becomes hackneyed. So
yes,
you kind of hamstringing yourself.
But it's okay at learning from the thing that's out there. So what it can do, I think, is maybe almost write a generic, formulaic sort of novel. So of which could potentially sell on Kindle or something like that.
But why?
Well, why? But there are lots of those that real authors are writing. So, for example, James Patterson, not to put him down, but he has been very successful. He's an amazing writer, but he's now got to a point where he can give an assistant a sort of
synopsis,
and then they can almost write it to a formula, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it could be, I think it's at almost at that level. So that's really interesting, and it could sell.
Yeah, I just find that so bizarre.
It won't. I don't think it replaces
literary
authors or even really good genre authors.
But I feel like there's already way too many authors out there who are struggling to get published.
Yeah.
I don't think AI is kind of the answer. I don't know. I saw someone on Twitter who was saying, surely we should be using the robots to do all the drudgery of our lives and open ourselves up to have more time for creativity and the things that we humans are really good at.
Well, I think that's what you could do. You could collaborate with it. So you could do the novel and then give it to the bot to say, can you please do the synopsis and send it to my agent? You know,
yeah, okay, it could be like for copywriting kind of purposes and people who want websites. Yeah, I can see a niche for it there.
Yeah.
And I also think for people who want to tell their story but aren't writers, that there's a spot there where you can kind of input some data about your parent or your whoever you want to memorialise, and they can write a biography, as it were.
It would be great for that.
And you can send it around to your friends and family.
There you go.
Yeah, I think its uses are limited, and it seems to be quite a novelty. And I guess it's a bit scary and perilous for authors who are in the space where it's kind of like, am I being made obsolete by something that is basically spurting out cliches?
Yes. The one caveat, and this is mentioned in the New Yorker article, was there's a great documentary, I think it was on Netflix, called AlphaGo, which is where they invented a machine to try to play Go, which is that Japanese game that's more complex than chess. So following on from the Deep Blue program that played chess against, I think, Garry Kasparov, and they pitched it against the top Go players in the world. And it's hilarious because this is a sort of a game that gets commentated. It's really, really amazing to watch. But there is a moment in the documentary where the program does a move that is surprising. Mm. And that is the element that I find really interesting, if it can surprise you.
Yeah.
And that did happen. Mm. So and that's mentioned in the New Yorker article. So anyway, anything is possible.
Yeah.
We don't know yet.
Interesting. Yet.
So on
terrifying.
On is it can have some terrifying aspects, I think. On to our book of the week, Trespasses by Louise Kennedy. And I think you had recommended this, and we're also reading it, I think, for the Adelaide Writers Week book club, because Louise Kennedy's coming for Adelaide Writers Week, which is very exciting. So Louise Kennedy grew up partly in Belfast and in Hollywood, which is just out of Belfast, and she now lives in Sligo, I believe. So this book, Trespasses, is her debut novel, but it draws from her experiences growing up. And she's also the author of a short story collection, The End of the World is a Cul-de-Sac, and she's been shortlisted twice for the Sunday Times Audible Short Story Award in 2019 and 2020. So very highly acclaimed. And before writing, she spent nearly 30 years working as a chef. Mm. So she's come a bit later to writing, but achieving amazing success. And I have to say, this doesn't read like a debut novel.
No, not at all.
So I can, maybe that's also the maturity and the experience. I don't know. Maybe she's been writing that whole time, but this is just the first published novel. But it certainly draws from her real life experiences, and set in Belfast in the 1970s and revolving around Kushla, who's in her 20s. She's a teacher and works sometimes at her family's pub. Her brother works at the family pub, and she has an affair with an older married barrister, and she's Catholic, her family's Catholic, and he is Protestant. So that's one of the dynamics. Obviously, there's also the fact he's older, he's married. It's really, that's all happening against the backdrop of the troubles, the conflict in Belfast, and through, we really see through her and her family and her students in the primary school where she teaches, the ongoing stress of that, the trauma, and then also the ripple effects. So, for example, her father has died before the book starts, and we see her mother drinking a lot, and you can, reading between the lines, imagine the trauma that she's trying to deal with in her own way. And also we see one of the students in particular in Kushla's class whose father is badly injured, and that whole family is affected. So that's really the setup. It's had some amazing blurbs. So Emma Donoghue says, a compulsive, readable love story. Nick Hornby says, a beautiful, devastating novel. Marion Keyes, intense, unflinching, honest. It broke my heart a million times. What did you think, Annie?
Well, I loved it. I read it maybe 6 months ago, and it's really stayed with me. I think it was one of my books of the year last year. It might not have made it onto our program in the top three, but it definitely was in the top 10. And I think it's one of those books that I went into only having heard good things but not knowing too much about, which I think is kind of a perfect way to approach a book. And yeah, I was just blown away by it. So I think I loved it for the contrast between the flatness of the writing. The sentences are really kind of dull or dead, which sounds bad but isn't, I think. It's just really matter of fact and really blunt.
I'd written down as a natural style.
Mm.
It just seems to be her going through her daily life.
And I think because all of them are living in this really deadened world where you can't feel much or you can't express much feeling, that kind of is reflected in the writing style.
But there's so much behind
it. The story, those characters and the relationships that develop just sparkle in spite of that kind of really flat tone. So I love that kind of contrast. Reminded me, a little bit of Sally Rooney, a little bit of Milkman by Anna Burns for obvious reasons. But yeah, I loved the way that she kind of doesn't focus on the big horrific things that are going on, even though, every morning in class the children are encouraged to share the news, which is, body found dead in ditch, bomb explodes, kills seven. These children who are 7 years old are being forced to just confront and have this lexicon of the most horrific things imaginable. And Kushla really feels that that's inappropriate, but she doesn't have much say in kind of mediating that. But she does focus on all the tiny little indignities and the little hardships, that make living that life so difficult. The everyday, Kushla being Catholic is always feeling like people are looking down on her. Michael, the man that she falls in love with, invites her to come to this Irish speaking class where he and his friends are learning to speak Irish. And there's such a divide between she's not very well off, they're very well off, they're older, and they're Protestants. And so she feels like, oh, I'm just the little Catholic girl coming to speak Irish in front of you and entertain, or it's kind of exoticized in this way. So, yeah, I think there were lots of really finely put, nuanced details that she included that, yeah, as you say, you could only know from having grown up in that world. The pacing of the story and the pitch of the development as you go on and get deeper into these people's lives is just perfectly executed.
Yeah, it does build to a, you feel this tension the whole way through the novel, don't you? And it's, she does it very well, how she brings that into the actual characters, because there's tension generally, but she makes you feel it because it's happening with specific characters that you come to care about. It's so interesting about the writing style, because I think it's not overwritten, and the effectiveness is that the flat or natural writing that feels quite simple then makes the actual events more dramatic because of what's not said.
It's all that understatement, which seems a very Irish thing as well, you know, yes, to kind of downplay something. Or
and it also reflects the reality, because Louise Kennedy has said growing up in that era, it was normalised. It became absolutely normal. And there's a scene in the book where Kushla goes, I think they go to Dublin, and she puts her bag for the person at the door to check her bag, and he says, we don't check bags, you know, you're fine. But she just did that as a normal
habit.
I suppose in the same way with COVID, we started wearing masks. You become accustomed to doing, you know, sanitising. You know, you become accustomed to things and it becomes normal. And in that same way, the prose reflects that, well, this is just how it is. And yet by being so matter of fact, it really confronts us, I think. We're confronted by it. And so Louise Kennedy said growing up there were bomb scares at school, there was a heavy security, and in her area, Hollywood, it was a bit more protected, but there was still a security presence. And she said there was still this tension of you have to be careful what you said, and until you got to know someone, and particularly whether they were Protestant or Catholic, how much you could say and whether you'd perhaps not say too much once if you sensed that they weren't friendly in that regard. And so that was just an ongoing thing that, again, she internalised.
When you always feel like your neighbours are spying on you. So there's this one student in her class, Davey, who is not very well off. He's from a Catholic family, but his mother is Protestant. And they live in a really highly Protestant area. And so when she goes to visit, she makes quite close friends with him and his family and tries to help out when the father gets injured. And no one will speak to her. You know, she drives up and she's just trying to help this family, bring some food and, you know, sit with the kids while the dad's in hospital. And she gets totally pilloried for it at school. She gets professionally kind of undercut because of it. Mm. And it's just a simple human, you would think it should be a simple human reaching out and saying, I can help in this situation, but no one else will do it.
No, it's really interesting. And as always, when we read books set in this time, that it's in our living memory. And yet I don't think we were fully aware of how difficult life was in Ireland during those years, and still is to some extent, I'm sure, in different pockets. But that was really eye-opening, and I thought the characters felt really real. We sort of feel like we understand them. Kushla's not perfect. She's very kind, but she's a bit naive. But at the same time, she's in this sort of constrained environment where you sense that she can't thrive. You wonder what would Kushla be like in a different place, or a different time. And there's just that influence of the church, which is really stifling, and particularly you see that at school, but you see it all around different aspects of her life. Yeah. And so you really feel for her.
There's a lot of growing up way too early. You know, she's caring for her mother, she's trying to look after the pub, she's trying to hold down her job, and then this relationship that she falls into with Michael is the one thing that she's ever kind of wanted and genuinely and felt as herself.
That's right, and you can understand how that evolves or how that happens. And Michael, the married older barrister, is actually portrayed as a very kind, intelligent man who's fighting for justice, going against the grain. But of course, on the other hand, he's cheating, and this isn't maybe the first time. And so he's complex and flawed, very much flawed as well. But I loved that wasn't, it was sort of presented without judgment. And what she does that's really beautiful is that she allows us to see all of those issues and flaws and problems with that relationship, and we can form our own view about it, but it's very much ambiguous. And she allows those ups and downs to play out and see, you know, you see the negative side, but she still lets that love come through.
I think there is a true connection there, and that's kind of the whole point, that it's like in the worst circumstances possible, this connection between these two people can still flourish and they can both be happy, even if it's for a really short amount of time, because it's not a tenable long-term
relationship.
You know going in that that's not going to happen.
And to be fair, he does say that, doesn't he? I can't promise you much. But she does allow for that happy, that glow, that glimmer of happiness, which I loved. And also I just thought that lived experience, which we've talked about, really came through. It felt very authentic. It didn't feel like a book that I could have written or you could write, for example, because we just weren't there. So all those little details, the car journeys that they take, depending on which part of the city you're going through, how many times you'll get stopped at a checkpoint, which really was happening, and how that would play out, all the dynamics, I think it just really made the book more powerful.
Yeah, and also the subtle humour, you know, when there's kind of siege situation going on, this is in the past but she's remembering it in the book, and she and her mother drive to go and visit the father's grave, and they get stopped at a checkpoint at the outside of the cemetery, and one of the all the people who have stopped them are wearing kind of balaclavas, and they get them to roll down the window, and as soon as she hears the voice of one of the men, she knows he's from the pub, and you know, he's one of their regulars, and she says, "Fidel, don't be ridiculous, like, let me in, what are you doing?" And he kind of, he's like, "Oh yeah, all right, sorry." So it's all these people who are just living on top of each other and have such different political views and religious views, but know that they kind of get along as people.
Yeah.
And so you just kind of, I don't know, you sacrifice yourself.
Yeah, there's an absurdity to it totally. As well, isn't there? But yeah, her mother was a great character too. I loved that portrayal.
Really complex character.
Really difficult. But she had some great moments. So, no, I thought it was excellent. I'm really glad I read it.
I'm glad.
And she's
keen to hear her speak about it.
Yes, I was just going to say she's really interesting to listen to. So I'm very keen to hear more.
Yeah.
So that was Trespasses by Louise Kennedy. And coming up, I think we'll be doing maybe Honour by Thriti Amrigar. We haven't read it yet, so we shouldn't make any promises, should we? And we were also talking about doing The Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel. So we'll keep you posted. In the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go, or email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Mr. _Annie.
Fabulous. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.